The board of directors gathered around a long oval table high up in the skyscraper meeting room of the main office tower. They murmured among each other, and finally 30-year-old Miss Bell Hindley came into the room. Then everyone went silent. Her skirt was a few inches too short for professional business policy, and her open dress shirt showed more cleavage than needed to seduce most men. 26-year-old Miss Emma Hurst was looking about and saw the men staring at Miss Hindley like she was a goddess. The directional lines of the eyes were not at her face, but to those parts of Miss Hindley's body that bared skin. Emma also noticed one of the women was showing a slight smile on her face if she was undressing Miss Hindley with just her eyes. Emma sighed slightly, and everyone knew that Miss Bell Hindley had slept her way to the top. She was a sharp and ruthless businesswoman, but she was also been a whore who used her body to get ahead in life. Everyone knew, and no one talked about it. So everyone pretended she wasn't, unless they wanted to be blackballed from the business world. Gentlemen and ladies, I thank you for joining me here today. Since Mr. King is away on a much-needed vacation these past few months, I have taken command until he returns. As you have noticed, in the last few months we have merged with other companies and become a giant in the business world. Miss Hindley said and paused so everyone could clap and nod to each other. Everyone knew when Miss Hindley said merge she meant hostile takeover. Because we have absorbed so many companies, you may noticed that most of our newest board members are women now. Mr. King has personally requested to me that we should have the best and brightest women among us. I have noticed none of the men are complaining about all the new women around us. Miss Hindley said, and everyone gave polite chuckles. Of course, whatever you do outside the office is your business. Miss Hindley said with a little wicked smile, and gave an extra second or two for the women who had been looking at her like men had been doing. It was clear to Emma she wanted everyone in the palm of her hand. We stand as an example for future generations of women. Mr. King wants to show the world that a woman can be leaders in the business world. Our profits are soaring, and we started construction on our new research stations worldwide. So on to the business at hand. Miss Hindley said and listened as each of them gave their reports to her. Finally, it came to Emma's turn to speak. Miss Hindley, as per your request, I looked into saving money and possible areas we could trim down now. There is one research building that is currently abandoned with all the equipment still there in storage, according to a report you personally submitted just before your promotion. Since we have other research buildings now in other countries, we could sell this one, then move the equipment to other needed places instead of buying more. Also, not to mention the small army of security guards employed to protect it. Emma said and waited for an answer. Emma had looked deeper into the research building and discovered more than Miss Hindley would want her to. Ah, you are referring to Building 7. I and Mr. King personally toured it just before his extended vacation. Mr. King's opinion was the equipment was out of date and research was a waste of time. He reassigned the team to other locations and decided it should serve as a storage house instead for expensive equipment. I suppose we could make a list of the items we don't need there anymore to make more room. I will have someone get you a list first thing in the morning. Miss Hindley said, and Emma saw the cold look in the woman's smile didn't reach her eyes. As usually, Mr. King is two steps ahead of the game. My next order of business was the space we were wasting by storing broken equipment in our other buildings. I have a list here of items that needed to be removed as soon as possible. Also, I think we need more computers in the labs so there is less manpower needed in our labs, which will save us money on wages. I outlined a business plan here in this green folder. Emma said and relaxed when Miss Hindley's smile finally warmed. Emma went on with several more ideas, and each one was better than the last. The one thing she didn't want to do was get on Miss Hindley's radar. There wasn't any proof yet that Miss Hindley was the cause, but a few board members seemed to have vanished off the face of the earth. The official report was they were transferred out to another branch, but Emma attempted to contact them and none of them could be reached. Emma had checked the records herself and even secretly hired a few private eyes to find out more. When all the private eyes disappeared one after another, Emma knew something was very wrong. Emma finished and the order of business moved to the next person. Emma had a plan in getting inside the main lab. One report from her last private eye said that Miss Sindley herself personally went there alone. He went in as a security guard and reported back there was one area that was strictly forbidden according to his email report. Just before he disappeared, he mentioned another woman with German and Russian background who carried in food supplies. According to the private eye, she barely spoke a word of English. Emma suspected someone was being held against his will there. Emma was guessing it was Mr. King. "Well, our meeting is over, Miss Hindley," said, and Emma gathered up her stuff, but left the green folder along with her other reports for Miss Hindley to read over in private. "If I may, a private girl's chat with you, Miss Hurst," Miss Hindley said while everyone else left the room. "Of course, Miss Hindley," Emma answered promptly and without any tone that could be considered insulting. The last person had left and she shut the door on their way out. "As one of the original board members, I know it must be hard with all the new changes. The good old boys club no longer exists now in our company. What do you think about us girls taking over?" Miss Hindley asked and gave Emma a very hard stare while she forced Emma to stand before her while she sat. "If I may speak freely, I don't think it was Mr. King who picked our female board members, but you. I must say I approve of the idea a great deal. There were times I felt uncomfortable around so many powerful men," Emma said and hung her head in slight shame to admit she had been scared just a little bit. "Oh, Emma, it's not the men who have all the power, but us women. They need us to bring them into this world, and without us they have no place for them to stick their manhood into to make more future generations of men. Could I share a secret with you now?" Miss Hindley asked and Emma looked up, pretending to hold back a smile. "If you can feel I can be trusted," Emma answered and saw the woman seated before her smile. "Don't say anything to anyone, and not even a fellow board member, but Mr. King was stressed out after touring Building 7 after he realized it was a failed project. He left that night on a private jet to get away from the stressful business life of daily operations. I managed to trace him to a series of tropical islands, but the trail went cold after that. He left the country and been running things by emails to me. If you ask me, he won't return until he was deflowered every pretty tan girl he can on whatever island he has set up his retreat on. I have convinced the news media he has become reclusive man taking an extended vacation that could last for quite a while. Personally, I don't think he wants to return and may run things from the shadows for years to come." Miss Hindley explained and watched as Emma heard it all. "I understand, Miss Hindley. Just between us girls," Emma said and had emotion. She was zipping her lips and gave her boss a fool's grin. "I think, Miss Hurst, in a few years after you show me just how loyal you could be, you may have vice president next to your name," Miss Hindley said and waved Emma away to leave her in peace so she could gather the reports up to review later. "Oh yes, Miss Hindley, I do my best. Whatever you need done, just call me," Emma said eagerly and playing her role as the faithful lackey as she left the room to nearly start shaking as she sat down in her own office. Too many people had disappeared and there was black hole when it came to the history of Building 7 research. A day later, Emma's second idea was approved and Emma was grinning when she saw a green stamp on her report, meaning she had the power to order old equipment to be moved to Building 7. Emma paid a friend of hers to make a special hideaway spot inside one of the expensive-looking equipment. Outward, it appeared to be a control panel unit. The next day, Emma would personally check the crates before they were packed and shipped off. Emma went down to the shipping warehouse after taking a cab. Her outfit she now wore was pants with her shirt tucked in while carrying a large purse. Her status as a board member got her past any security checkpoints and she went straight to the area where the crates were being unpacked by two men. Emma dismissed the security guard and told him she'd see herself out later. Emma went to work consulting her BlackBerry and checking each shipping label. The two workers looked nervous, but went about opening the rest of the crates to check each one. After Emma was finished, they would nail them back up. It was a pain to unload the equipment out of the box and rebox them, but it was important that it was checked for damage even if inside they were already broken in some way. Emma pretended to make a small sound of dissatisfaction. The less experienced worker looked at his buddy and the more senior member stepped forward, "Something wrong, madam?" he asked as Emma looked at her fancy phone and then back down at the unpacked control unit. "The Seer is going to Building 7's main lab, but it's supposed to be shipped today. I need it on the truck today," Emma said, and the worker looked at his buddy Frank. "Go see Eric in shipping and see if he can make some room on the 6 p.m. send out," the worker said to his buddy, and he nodded. He left the room in a hurry since it was close to being the time. "Thanks, I could get into trouble with my boss if we don't send this out today. Here is $200 for you and your friend if you can express it there tonight," Emma said, pulling out the bills and handed them over. She was acting if the money meant nothing to her.
"Thanks, madam. I will catch up with Frank and make sure it is sent out within the hour," Frank said and left Emma alone. Emma looked about and saw no one or security cameras. Emma went to the back part of the unit to a panel marked for hazard radiation warning. On it in clear big print was "Do not open," followed by the world sign for radiation. Emma slid her fingers until she found the hidden release lock where her friend had shown her. He put it in the back panel, slid away quietly without a squeak. Emma checked her purse and pulled out the flashlight, then the dart gun already loaded. Inside the hidden space were enough supplies to last 3 days, and inside a plastic cage held a rat trying to get out. Emma would have remembered not to make a sound when anyone was around as she prepared to climb inside. Rolled up in the corner was a sleeping bag too she could lay on for comfort. Her friend had everything already in place for her. Emma slipped in and locked the panel back from the inside. Now she could slip out from side panels which were tighter fit, or the main panel she used to enter. Frank came back with his friend just as Emma switched off her phone. Now only the peephole showed any light, and they were small as screws holes. "Guess the big boss from upper management finished up. I'm telling you, Larry, the lady gave us $100 to get it loaded right away," Frank said, and Emma thought some friend he was stiffing his buddy.
"Okay, Frank. Let's get this thing crated back up and I will take it to the truck now," Larry said, and already Emma hurt in putting the wooden walls back up. There was a lot hammering, and slowly Emma lost her light to darkness. Emma felt the rush of excitement as the crate was loaded, then started moving through the building to the loading dock. Emma heard as they went from concrete to metal, then onto a wood flooring of a semi-truck. A deep rumble of an engine was somewhere to her right as Emma was lying in the complete darkness. It seemed a long time before Emma heard the truck door closed, then they were moving again. With each stop, Emma tensed when she heard the door to the truck open, but Building 7 was somewhere on the midway point of his route. Emma turned on her cell phone and called in sick.
"Yeah, Susan. It's Emma. I won't be in for a few days. Coming from the doctors, and he said I need plenty of bed rest," Emma said, and had her ass covered now for work. The truck went on down the road as she spoke, and finally it came to her stop. Finally Emma felt her crate being moved, then someone was undoing the wooden walls. "Special express today. Someone needs to take it to the main lab for storage," a gruff male voice said, and Emma was blinded for a second by the points of light now shining through her peepholes. "I'm not cleared for that area, but our head of security is. He won't like it, because the big boss dragon lady will tear him a new one," a young male voice answered back, and Emma heard the sniffling of a dog. Emma found the plastic cage with the rat and knew the next step of her plan had to be done now. Thanks to the previous private eye, she knew about their security checks. Emma used a pre-cut hole toward the front side of the panel unit, then opened the door to the cage slowly. The rat had no choice to go into the pre-cut hole, and there was a path he'd been trained to take. It went to an opening on the outside. Furious barking started as the dog caught Emma's scent. The rat ran into the hole, and Emma held the plastic cage there just in case the rodent doubled back on her. She didn't want to be double-crossed by a rodent of all creatures.
"You got something, boy?" the young male said, then Emma heard the gruffer man scream in surprise. Suddenly the dog wasn't barking, but scraping his claws in hot pursuit.
"Jesus Christ! A fucking rat!" the driver yelled, and the young guard was laughing. Even Emma had to hold back a snicker. He screamed like a woman. Emma heard the death squeal of a rat, then the guard was giving praise to his dog partner.
"Disgusting!
The gruff-toned driver said. Then Emma heard him walk away. The guard was leaving the room too as he called on his radio for his boss. Less than a minute later, Emma was peeking through the holes to see a loading dock long abandoned and nearly empty save for some power jacks still charging on one wall. Tomorrow, according to her orders, more boxes would show up. Then a man entered muttering curses under his breath as he approached the crate and gave it a glance over. Emma watched as he found a power jack then slid it under the unit. Emma watched as they went through long hallways and past several doors with security card locks designed to keep anyone out rather than inside. The head of security came to the final door with a heavy look to it and punched in a number then swiped his keycard in. Emma was now being moved into the main lab judging from the tables and divided sections of plastic walls. The center of the room held a sealed glass or plastic chamber with an airlock door on the side to enter or leave from. The man grunted and left the unit in the nearest corner almost out of sight. A large, but muscled woman speaking Russian came out of a back room yelling at him and she wasn't happy he was there. "Tell Miss Sindley. I'm sorry." The man said speaking very slowly and down if she was a child. The security guy left and the woman was still yelling until he passed through the doors. Emma held back a gasp when the large woman kicked the control unit. Then the woman switched as she went to muttering in the German language. Emma started to have doubts about finding Mr. King here, but that back room had caught her interest. Emma listened as the big woman walked away, then she settled down on a sleeping bag. The thrills had taken their toll and Emma went into sleep as she took an evening nap. Emma awoke when a cell phone rang and from the ringtone she knew it wasn't hers. A second later she remembered she had turned hers off. Emma remembered not to panic when she awoke in near darkness. The large woman said something in Russia then looked around to see if anything needed to be cleaned or put away. She eyed the control unit then turned away to disappear into a back room. Less than an hour later someone came into the main lab and Emma heard a voice she feared. "Helga. Bring Mr. King out." Miss Sindley called out if and by the tone she was saying it like you call a dog. Emma heard something in Russia then Helga reappeared with the baby in her arms. Emma was confused and thought maybe Mr. King had a son that Miss Sindley was keeping hostage. The baby wasn't happy, as he made funny frustrated gurgling noises. Miss Sindley then spoke in Russia and pointed to the main chamber as she went over to a steel lock box with a number keypad on it. Emma couldn't see the numbers, but Miss Sindley pulled out something like a flashlight, but it had toggle knobs and a button for on or off. Helga put the squirming baby in the center of the empty chamber then left. Miss Sindley went over to the open doorway then pointed the flashlight device at the baby now on the floor kicking his little legs. Miss Sindley moved away from the door to put the device back in its secure steel box as Helga shut the airlock door to the chamber. Emma was confused by all this, but she kept watching. Since Miss Sindley and Helga were watching the baby, Emma started to watch the infant, but he wasn't an infant now, but a toddler. Emma couldn't understand until his baby fat disappeared as he grew into a little boy. For there was no doubt about that now it was a little boy for his cute little penis swayed and bounced as he stood up with no shame to his nudity. Emma watched as he grew older and older going through his childhood years in the matter of seconds. Emma did gasp as she recognized the teenage Mr. King now standing and looking proud as ever. He winced from the pain, but stayed standing up as his body grew into a young man's body and stopped growing. "Hello, Mr. King. I hope Helga has been treating you like a baby," Miss Sindley said with a grin. Miss Sindley was wearing one of those stupid grins like the cat who ate the canary smile on her face. "Belladonna," Mr. King said addressing Miss Sindley. Emma could just barely see that wiped the smile from her face. Even Emma knew that meant beautiful death since it referred to the poison nightshade. Perhaps it was an old insult he made up just for Miss Sindley. "Tomorrow I'm going to reduce you to a toddler and tan your ass for that remark," Miss Sindley said and walked forward then looked down at the naked man behind the plastic wall. Emma noticed the speaker box and realized it was a sound-sensitive mic. When you spoke and it picked up your voice to transmit through the wall. "Come on in now and we will settle this," Mr. King said and Miss Sindley laughed. "Mr. King, I suspect someone in the company's higher ranks has been hiring private eyes to look for you.
I'm happy to report that all the private eyes so far have been reduced all into cum spots on the floor. Such a handy device, the temporal field generator. Miss Sindley said, waving a hand toward the now locked box. Emma realized she kept it here to torment Mr. King even more. To be so close to a device that would give him the upper hand. Yes, I know you're a murderer. You reduce me and the working staff into babies, then killed the working staff by reverting them back into the preconception stage. You have been keeping me alive for information and your own sick amusement. Mr. King said, still standing, as Miss Sindley removed her outer jacket to show off more cleavage to him. There is that M-word again. Shame there are no bodies for the police to find, or you might stand a good chance of being rescued. By the way, does the name Emma Hurst mean anything to you? Miss Sindley asked and watched Mr. King's face closely for a reaction. She was the youngest board member before I got stuck in this hellhole. She is curious, smart, and has a spirit of adventure in her. Mr. King said, listing off traits. Is she loyal to you? Miss Sindley said and banged a palm on the plastic wall in anger. He was listed off stuff she already knew or could have found out easily enough. I hardly think so. As you already know, she was only around me for a month. I helped her personally for the first 2 weeks, then she took to the business like a duck to water. Mr. King answered, and Miss Sindley seemed happy with that answer. The woman has become a pain in my side. She has been looking into Building 7 for some time and seemed a bit too curious about it at first. Maybe I will invite her here and turn her into a little girl. I swear to you, the woman is a brat on the inside. I just might change her even if she proves to be innocent and loyal to me. A real shame to lose a woman, but you will be happy to know that most of the original board members are gone. I left William alive, but he is in a prenatal care at Mercy Point Hospital. Of course you know that already. Today means it's been 2 whole weeks now. Anyone regressed under 3 months old loses their memories, don't they, after being a baby for 2 weeks? Miss Sindley asked in a mocking tone of concern, and Emma saw the look on Mr. King's face passed over to angry. Emma remembered he had been close to his business buddy William. Belle, you're a bitch from hell and I will see you over my knees then behind the wooden bars of a crib if I could have my way. Mr. King spoke and walked forward to the wall, and Emma smiled when Miss Sindley back up a step or two in fear. Then she remembered the clear wall between them. If not Miss Hurst, then how about Mr. David Weber then? Miss Sindley asked, and Mr. King gave another smartest answer. Emma noticed he didn't really answer the questions by evading them or stalling for time for more witty comebacks. Miss Sindley asked about several more people, then asked for business advice, and finally Mr. King answered truthfully. Emma knew that he really cared what happened to the company and perhaps even the people employed by the company. Thank you, Mr. King. As a reward for your help tonight, you will be an adult for this night at least. Don't mind Helga, since she has seen every inch of your body anyway. Miss Sindley said, smirking as she said it. Referring the inches of the male body that gave women the most pleasure. Miss Sindley was in a pretty good mood when she turned away and finally noticed what was new in the room. Miss Sindley spoke something Russia and Helga answered in her own quick Russia tongue. Emma moved to the far corner inside the unit as Miss Sindley approached, then looked over the unit. Then Emma heard papers as Miss Sindley was checking the shipping papers. It is that woman again. I'm going to reduce her into a wailing 6-year-old, then spank her until her ass is red as a ripe apple. Did anyone see or hear the baby? Miss Sindley asked as her mood changed to angry, then realized who she was speaking to. Emma heard more Russian words, then Miss Sindley walked away, and Emma could hear the angry clicking sounds of her heels made as she left the room. Helga moved away, and Emma risked looking out from her peepholes once more. Helga walked over to the plastic cell and looked at Mr. King, speaking softly, then she blew him a kiss. Helga then sighed and left to go back into the other room. Emma risked sliding the side panel, and that moved on grease rollers. Mr. King noticed the movement and watched as his mind was trying to puzzle out what he was seeing. It was a tighter fit, but the back panel had been put against the wall. Emma stepped out carefully, avoiding making any noise, and blessed her tennis shoes. Emma stretched and stopped when a bone popped, but her ears were alert for any sound.
beside a buzzing light she heard nothing else but the flow of air being fed into the room. Emma held the dart gun in one hand as she moved. Mr. King now knew who she was and he glanced back in the back room if Helga would return soon. If she opened the airlock door it would hiss loudly, so Emma thought she'd go over to the locked steel box instead. The time device was the advantage she needed to have. Emma resisted looking at the nude Mr. King as she moved, but did when she was standing in front of the locked steel box. "I need the combination," Emma whispered. Mr. King didn't speak but held up fingers. 1-9-7-7, Emma whispered as she looked from him to the keypad. The beep with each number seemed loud, but the box was sliding open when someone shouted in the Russian language. Emma raised her dart gun and fired. Thanks to the practice she did every week, she put in the first dart squarely in Helga's chest. To Emma's surprise, Helga staggered then regained her footing, still charging at full speed. Emma put two more darts in the woman's chest, then got backhanded by a hand bigger than her own feet. Two strong arms grabbed her around the waist and started squeezing the life out of her. Emma struggled, then raised the gun up as much as her pinned arms could allow, then fired at that awkward angle. The fourth dart hit home in Helga's wide neck. The arms loosened, then fell away from Emma, and Helga's face went slack, then like a mighty tree she fell to the ground with a crash. Either the first darts finally took effect or the last one was the tipping point. Emma was coughing and gasping for the breath of life as she slowly stood up, then stumbled. Emma held the counter for support, then went over to the airlock. The controls were simple and she had seen how it was locked. She thought she might need help, and Emma freed the only person that could help her. "Thank you, but you almost forgot about the TFG device," Mr. King said as he was walking free from the sealed room. Mr. King went over to the steel box and lifted out the precious device, if it was a baby. He was setting the controls on it when Emma gained enough air to speak again. "That woman isn't human. Four darts is enough to overdose someone," Emma said and checked to see she still had two left in the magazine with one in the chamber. She was a pro ex-wrestler, now banned in most countries because of her roughness in the ring. Mother was from Russia and her father was a German man. Belle told me all this so I could understand her background. Belle found the meanest and strongest woman that could handle me no matter how old I was, Mr. King said, then pointed the device at Helga. He pushed the button and Emma watched in awe, now much closer to the show as Helga was shrinking. The bulk of her body grew smaller as muscles got less and less. The woman had been wearing huge overalls with a man's shirt under it, but now it was getting baggy on her younger body. Emma watched as the hard face changed into face of a teenage girl that sadly showed even in her teen years appeared she had fallen out of the ugly tree hitting a few branches on the way down. Helga stopped when she hit her childhood years and Emma could tell she had been tall and lanky in stature even with the clothes threatening to swallow her up. Mr. King went around to where her head rested and pulled her out of the clothes by her arms, leaving her naked. Emma realized what he was doing and grabbed the child's feet as they carried her through the airlock door. Then Mr. King closed it himself once Emma was free of the room, then he went over to the voice box and turned it off. The child Helga stirred, then woke up puzzled by her hands, then she looked down at her skinny tall body. She had no breasts to speak of, and Emma smiled when Helga noticed she had no hair where it counted on a woman. Like any woman finding herself suddenly nude, she cupped herself then put a hand over her flat chest, now highly concerned for modesty. Mr. King was pulling on the shirt, then attempted to wear the overalls, but it was clear right away they were a tripping hazard, so he found a pair of scissors in a drawer and started cutting the pants length shorter with a very crude result. Emma was feeling her swollen lip and knew by this time tomorrow she have a bruise to impress even a boxer. "Okay, Emma, come over here," Mr. King said, and Emma flinched a little when he raised the device to point at her. "I'm going to use it to heal you. I used it on Helga and you noticed the drugs in her system disappear when she got younger. Otherwise she wouldn't have woken up so quickly," Mr. King said, and Emma stepped forward ready to close her eyes, but felt something like static run over her body instead. The beam of the device was invisible, which made sense. Emma couldn't see time itself.
As Emma thought about it, you could only see the effects of time on a person or object. Emma looked at herself and couldn't tell a difference if there was one. Apparently, the device only worked on living creatures. Congrats, you're now 25 years old again and your face is healed, Mr. King said, and Emma checked her lip and it felt normal. The aches in her knees were gone and her face didn't sting like a son of a bitch now. Thanks, it's even fixed the cramps in my legs from spending so much time in my hideaway spot, Emma said, looking back at the control unit that got her inside Building 7. Beware of Trojans bearing gifts, Mr. King said, looking at it with amazement. Helga, Miss Sindley's voice said loudly, and both Mr. King and Emma turned toward the noise with their weapons at the ready. Both realized it was coming from the intercom speaker by the door a second or two later. Emma, go over there and say this in a deeper voice, Mr. King said, and then said something in Russia she didn't understand. Emma did so and attempted to lower her voice as she pushed the button to talk. There was a long pause, or it felt like it, then Miss Sindley said something in Russia and Mr. King listened hard with his full attention on each word. Then he told Emma a single word to say. Emma figured it meant yes, since Mr. King nodded as he said it. Old habits die hard, Emma thought. I owe Helga one now. She taught me enough Russia when I was a baby, I have a passing understanding of it in conversations, Mr. King said, and took a position against the wall so when a person walked in they wouldn't see him there unless they turned around. What did she say? Emma asked, joining him against the wall. Get ready, I'm bringing a friend to show him a little surprise, Mr. King said, and adjusted the device in his hands once more. She is so ticked off, I think she is bringing the head of security down here to kill him or reduce him into infancy, Emma said, taking a big gulp of air. Think you can nail both of them with that toy gun of yours, Mr. King asked in a teasing tone. If I miss, you fire on both of them. I will aim for the head of security first, since he is armed with a real gun, Emma said, and Mr. King agreed as they waited in silence. On the other side of the door there was a beep, then the door swung in and two people stepped forward. What the hell? The head of security asked, seeing a naked homely 8-year-old little girl banging on the clear plastic wall of the containment room. It appeared she was trying to warn them of something. Emma sighted down her dart gun barrel, then fired. The head of security spun around after the dart landed in the spot of the back where you can't get a good reach. On reflexes he reached for the source of the pain, then he stumbled a step to fall down completely knocked out. Miss Sindley spun when she saw the dart with its bright red and sticking out of the man's back. Emma waited for her to realize who was standing there, then she fired. Miss Sindley looked down stunned at the dart sticking in her chest, then pulled it out, stumbling a little bit. Then she leaped for the gun still on the head of security's belt. Mr. King stepped forward, kicking the 9mm gun out of her hands, then pointed the device down at her. The gun went spinning away far out of reach. Don't move, Mr. King said as he looked down on a woman he hated. I will kill you both, Miss Sindley said, then fell on top of the head of security. No, Belle, I don't think I will give you the chance, Mr. King said, and pulled the woman off of the head of security to point the device at the man first. Wait, she was bringing him down to kill him or change into a baby, Emma said, and Mr. King paused in the act of pushing the button. Even if he knows nothing, I am not about to let the worst head of security I ever seen leave here without punishment. Besides, whom do you think discovered the new security guard was really a private eye? He betrayed the private eye to her, Mr. King explained, and fired the device with a simple push of the button. Emma watched as the man turned into a teenager, little boy, toddler, then a tiny pink infant. It's better than he deserves. I'm giving him a second chance to start over in life, and in 2 weeks he won't remember a thing, Mr. King said, and picked up the almost newborn baby to carry him toward the back room. Emma followed to see the room Helga had come from. A bedroom slash nursery had been set up. Of course the baby woke up and Mr. King held him in front of a mirror, and Emma wasn't sure the baby could even see himself clearly, since babies that young didn't have clear vision yet. Nonetheless, he figured out his fate and screamed like a banshee after a minute.
Mr. King put him into a crib he knew all too well and left the room as Emma backed away from the doorway. "Now for Belle," Mr. King said and adjusted the device still in his hand. Emma watched as he fired it from a distance, and she watched as the beautiful yet dangerous woman became younger. Her beauty never left her face as she went back to being a teenager, but her face did have more childhood innocence to it. Even Emma felt a stirring of motherhood in her when Belle turned into a little girl. Because of her slutty business outfit she wore, it left her naked as she shrank out of her clothes to become a very pretty little girl with a round innocent face to match. The face hardly changed as Belle reached toddlerhood, then her aging process stopped. Emma wanted to hold the little girl and spoil her rotten, then Emma remembered what the adult woman had been like. Mr. King picked up Miss Sindley, now reduced to a little toddler girl about 4 years old, and went over to a chair where he laid Belle across his lap with her little bare ass sticking up. "Belle, my little angel from hell. Time for you to wake up and get a spanking from Uncle Jason," Mr. King said in a sing-song voice, and the toddler stirred awake, then looked at him and attempted to squirm away. The smacks that followed were loud and without mercy as Belle cursed, then went into a sobbing rage. They left her making no sense at all as she screamed out either pleas or insults. Mr. King was listing off all the bad stuff she had done, including murdering, kidnapping, stealing company property, unlawful imprisonment, and he left torture for last. Then he stopped and carried her under one arm over to the airlock door. The child Helga was backing away into the far corner of the sealed room away from the airlock door as the door opened. He put the toddler Belle in a corner where she stayed curled up, bawling her eyes out. Helga managed to dodge Mr. King's first attempt to grab her, but his other hand caught her and he wrestled her onto the ground, not as gently he would treat a real child. There on the floor he pinned her and gave her the same spanking he performed on Belle. The little girl screamed in pain and he didn't stop until her ass was red in color. Emma watched with mixed feelings. She couldn't really judge the man since she hadn't been held against her will for months like he had been. Mr. King sealed the airlock door as he left the chamber, then he went over to a corner sink to run his hand under some cold water. "Miss Hurst, may I borrow your phone if you have one? I have a few calls to make, and if you would, I need you to go shopping for me. I will let security know you will be leaving this building and allow you to come back inside. I'm going to need some nice looking clothes than what I am wearing. Not to mention a really good pair of shoes," Mr. King asked, then gave her his clothing sizes as he called out to her from nearly the other side of the room. "Sure, I have a BlackBerry in my purse. It is still in my hiding spot," Emma said, and went over to the hiding spot to get the requested item. It was a few days later that Mr. King returned to the spotlight of the business world to announce he wasn't going to lead anymore, but play the role of a major stockholder. While Miss Sindley was reported to be on an extended vacation leave after having a nervous breakdown, Mr. King assured the public the best care was being provided and she was being pampered like a baby, according to the press release he gave to them. Months later, Mr. King walked into Building 7 and went through several automatic security doors until he reached the main lab. Now it was a place to keep people in rather than out. Emma was stretched out in a comfortable chair and Jason King looked about the room that looked more like a living room than a lab now. "So how are our inmates doing?" Jason asked, and Emma looked up over to the sealed room through the open doorway blocked with a baby gate to see two diaper-clad baby girls. The larger one was throwing a fit because she was trapped in the playpen, and the smaller one was playing with herself in a naughty way that would get her a smack on the butt later on for her attempt to give herself pleasure. Helga still bites Belle whenever she doesn't get her way, so she is in time out until I feel this time she can learn her lesson and Belle is missing sex again. "I will smack her but a minute or two if you want," Emma said, noticing what Belle was doing with herself. "Have they learned any words yet?" Jason asked. "Yeah, and Bella got a quick cold shower for her trouble. She called me Kaka Mama," Emma answered, and Jason chuckled. They still had their adult minds, but their bodies weren't developed enough to say very much. William was happy to see his Uncle Jason, and the parents I arranged are a good understanding couple. "He doesn't show any signs of remembering me even a year later. It's kind of hard seeing him as a real baby.
He was so tiny when I rescued him out of the prenatal ward. Jason said, and Emma saw it hurt the man a great deal, so see his friend not gone, but so changed so much he might as well be dead to him now. Do you think your former head of security has learned to crawl again? Emma asked, enjoying her new job as head of security for Building 7. She lived on site and got paid to look after two very terrible babies. It's a good bet he has learned to walk again. I hope he enjoys hard-working farm life. I do have some good news to tell you. I finally arranged for our darling baby girls to be adopted. Helga will be going to a very nice, but wealthy British couple to be raised over there in England. While Belle will be going to her younger sister who she hates. You can say Belle told me a lot about her family when I was held here. Jason said and pulled out two needles clearly marked and capped. What are those? Emma asked. Going away presents. Jason answered and turned away to collect the time device from its locked steel box. The numbers had been changed and only Jason knew the code now. Emma went back to reading her book, thinking she was going to be out of a job soon. The size of her bank account gave her a very good reason not to worry about money. Belle. You naughty little girl, Jason said in a scolding voice as he stepped over the baby gate, then walked over the soft plush toys scattered about the floor. Belle stopped what she was doing and sat up to stare at Jason in an uncertain way. I know it is wrong to reward a baby after they do something bad, but I do have something for you. Do you happen to know what a retrovirus is? Jason asked and saw even Helga was listening with full attention. Jason made sure he kept them both above 3 months old. He enjoyed seeing the babies learning to crawl over and over again, then he let them stay 8 months old. Since they learned to stand up on their own, he kept them from getting any older. I had the research and development boys and girls make me two very special retroviruses. This virus is designed to rewrite your DNA. Helga, for your benefit, I will explain what DNA is. Jason said, seeing now he had a captured audience. DNA is the genetic code which makes you what you are. How pretty or ugly you will be to how long you are going to live. For example, this needle is filled with a virus that changes the genetic code of receiver into Belle's younger sister. Did you know that Helga, she hates her sister with a passion because the woman has everything she doesn't have? They are a nice happy family with a few kids and loving father. Now you must ask, what will I say to the public when the adult Belle doesn't reappear? Jason asked and paused for effect. It seems Belle got herself pregnant just before her nervous breakdown and sadly lost her life during the childbirth process, but there's no need to weep over the mother-to-be because there is a happy ending. Her baby girl Donna was born and will be extremely healthy. Not only will this little needle change dear Belle's DNA into a carbon copy of a sister whom she hates, I'm pretty sure the both of you will live to be well over 100 years old and be highly fertile in the baby-making department. Fitting, since in your previous life you took people's lives. Jason said and saw Belle had the scared panic look just before she was going to get a good spanking. First, Uncle Jason will make you just a few weeks old. Jason said, pointing the device at Belle, who was trying to crawl away to hide or escape even if there was nowhere to go. She only managed to crawl out of her diaper and soon was squirming as a helpless baby on the nursery floor as she got too young to even hold her own little head up. Next, we will inject her with a virus that will make her look like a mini-me version of her younger sister, Jason said, and Belle gave a hiccuping cry of alarm as Jason injected her, but then recapped the needle very carefully unless he wanted to be changed into a girl. Jason half crawled over to the playpen to see Helga huddled down as low as she could get, whimpering like a scared little puppy. Silent tears were falling from her face as she stared up in terror at her fate in Jason's hands. Helga, what can I say? I'm in your debt because if you hadn't taught me Russian words when I was, shall we say, in your tender care as a baby, or teased me by being the butts of your joking comments when you changed my diapers, I might not have learned to understand Russia and trick Belle into walking into a trap. I decided that you should get Belle's DNA with one minor change to it. Jason said and saw Helga was starting to understand what he was saying. That's right, Helga. You're going to be the prettiest, most adorable little girl around who is going to be a beautiful woman someday.
For you the story of the ugly duckling will come true as you will be transformed into that fabled swan. Jason said, and baby Helga stood up to jump up and down in the playpen while reaching out for Jason. Not just yet, Helga. I haven't mentioned the minor change I had included. I had the lab people make sure your changes won't happen right away. As you grow up again, you are going to be a little small for your age and potty training will take longer, but over the years you will get just a little more beautiful with each passing day. When you hit puberty again, everyone is going to think an angel fell from heaven after the final change to your body takes place. So when you are an adult again, you will be under the average adult female height and size, but will have an angelic face to make up for having small breasts and short stature. The best you can hope for is a mere 5 feet if you are lucky. Jason said and watched as Helga considered what he said but resumed her excited jumping. Okay. Just calm down. Jason said, chuckling as he pointed the time device now at Helga as Belle went into a full tantrum crying fit that made her face go bright red. She had heard everything and understood that Helga was going to get all her beauty while she will be growing up looking like a younger version of her new mother. Helga let out only a pain whimper when Jason injected her with the last needle he had, but she was cooing happily afterwards as she squirmed naked on the floor of the playpen in a younger body. Jason removed the now too large size diapers and made a call on his cell phone. Soon a van would come and two women would come in to collect the babies. Before the sun would set that day, each baby girl would be in the loving arms of their new parents. For Belle, now known as Donna, she grew up with an innocent mind and listened to countless comments just how much she looked like her adopted mother rather than her real mother who died giving life to her only daughter. Thankfully, she wasn't a burden on her aunt or uncle because a very large trust fund had been set up by her mother just before her tragic death. It was enough for Donna to live an average life, and in the end Donna married. Then she gave birth to twins and triplets whenever she had become pregnant. For Helga, who was renamed to Bridget by her new parents. It was during those early years Bridget's parents almost regretted in adopting her because she was always small for her age and not as adorable as they were promised she was going to be. Bridget had to wear her nappies far longer than all her young playmates and hid her dummies so the mean adults didn't throw them away. Not long after, Bridget became a humble, but very smart little girl. As Bridget grew closer to puberty, she blossomed into a beautiful child that her parents adored very much. Then after Bridget went through puberty, her parents arranged for her to fall in love with a noble son of a family they were already good friends with. Bridget gave him many sons and daughters after they wed, but the one thing no one could understand was why Bridget loved watching wrestling. Jason folded his cell phone closed and explained to Emma what he did to the babies, now completely helpless. He tossed the needles away and still had one last surprise just for Emma. Don't I get a going away present? Today is my last day on the job because of you. Emma accused, and Jason rolled his eyes, then pointed a hand toward the doorway he came in through. Emma thought he meant for her to leave, but she was trapped inside the building because only Jason could open the doors to leave. Then Emma looked at the bags he bought. There were the normal brown food bags, but among them was a bright pink one he did well to hide among the others. I always love it when you go shopping. What did you get me? Emma said, jumping up to run over to the bag. Just a dress. Jason answered, and Emma pulled it out with her back turned to Jason. When Emma pulled it out and held it against her body, something was wrong with it, and Emma knew what it was almost right away. It was a child's size sundress for a little girl, of course, and far too small for her. Then there was a static tingle going up her body, and Emma spun around to see Jason holding that time device right at her. Then he locked it back up in the steel box secured by a key number only he knew. Jason, I don't want to be a little girl again. Stop playing around. Emma half yelled as she grew younger. Already Emma was in her teenage years. Emma, I'm sorry, but you're the only other person who knows about the temple device. No one is going to believe the wild tales of a little girl if you get the idea to tattle on me. Jason explained as Emma held on to her slipping nightgown she still wore from the night before. But I thought we were like a couple. We go shopping and see sad movies together. You were always giving me polite kisses on the cheeks, and I thought I could be your girlfriend.
Emma said, now years away from seeing puberty ever again, and she was nearly finished getting younger.
Oh, Emma, I thought you knew. Think about what you are saying to me just now. I really love to shop, and all the movies we've seen are known as girly movies. I never kissed you on the lips or even held your hand. Didn't you ever wonder why I cared about William so much? Jason said, listing off what she has said and pointing out things she missed.
No, you are joking.
It could be.
Emma said, her little six-year-old body now trembling with fright as she now realized a very important fact about Jason King. It was the same reason why Miss Hindley could never hope to seduce him, and why Helga had sighed when she saw the naked man in all his glory. They knew his dark secret he kept from the public and even his business friends. Then Jason told her what she just figured out.
I'm gay. William had been my lover, and he got himself turned into a prenatal baby looking for me.
Jason explained, and Emma went down to her knees crying and let the gown fall away from her sexless child body for a moment before she pulled it back up to cover herself. There was almost no point in her modesty, since he didn't like girls at all.
It's okay, Emma. I am not going to abandon you.
In fact, I arranged things so you're now legally my daughter from a secret relationship I had years ago, according to the report I'm going to leak to the media. Jason said, going over to Emma to pull the gown out of her hands. Jason slowly picked her up in his arms and grabbed the sundress with a free hand.
Please, Jason. Make me older again. I will leave the country, or you can exile me to an island with some sexy men as company. I won't tell anyone about the device. All these months I haven't told a soul about it.
Emma begged as Jason carried her back over to the chair she had been in when he first came in. Jason let her down on her own 2 feet to stand naked while helped her get into the dress he bought. Emma resisted getting into the dress. If she was wearing that dress, it meant she accepted her new life as his daughter without question.
Emily, you be a good little girl now.
Jason ordered.
I'm Emma, not Emily.
Emma said, and Jason gave her one quick smack to her bare butt. Emma knew he had held back his hand. She had seen him hit a lot harder than he did just now. Plus, it didn't really hurt because it was done to get her full attention. If she didn't agree with him, there was sure to be a more painful spanking coming.
Honey, if you fight me on this, I may consider not letting you get any older.
You want to spend your birthdays getting younger rather than older.
I wouldn't mind changing your diapers in a few years.
Or maybe I will make you spend a decade as a six-year-old girl.
Now what is your name?
Jason asked, and Emma knew she was no longer the adult she had been just a minute ago. Now she would have to consider herself as a very smart little girl with a rich daddy.
Emily.
Emily said with a defeated tone in her voice.
And how old are you?
Jason asked.
I'm 6 years old.
Emily answered, remembering just how young he had made her now.
In the future I want you to hold up your fingers when you say it.
That sort of thing really melts adults' hearts.
Okay, one final question.
Who is your daddy?
Jason asked.
You are.
Emily said, and smiled as she said it, because she knew he loved her on some strange level.
That's right.
Jason said, and gave her a kiss on the forehead, then held out the dress, and Emily understood right away what he wanted. Without any further protest, Emily got dressed in the sundress.
Oh, be still my heart, it's the prettiest little girl I ever seen.
Jason said once the dress was on her, and Emily did a little spin in it before she looked down at herself. As long she as didn't raise her dress over her head, no one had to know at that very moment she wasn't wearing underwear.
Come on. You are just saying I'm pretty.
Emily said bashfully.
It was hard to think of herself as beautiful or even pretty with her now non-sexy body.
You doubt me.
Let us retreat to the bathroom, my darling daughter, and can see for yourself in the mirror.
Then I will fix your hair, then we will go shopping for some Mary Jane shoes.
After that I will let you pick out any toy or game system you desire.
Price tags are little concern to me.
Then we are going home, and I can wait to see your face when you see the room in my country house I have set up just for you.
You will be protected by a high stone wall all the way around my home.
You can play in the backyard, even sleep under the stars every night if you want to until the weather changes. Don't you worry about your bank account, for I will have the money transferred into your college fund and trust account for safekeeping," Jason said, and causing her laugh with delight when he started to carry her over his shoulder to the bathroom. Jason left with his new daughter right after the women left with the babies. Emily found out he was true to his word, and they had even stopped to have some ice cream before returning to Jason's country home. Emily saw the narrow tall gate and stone walls, and she knew this was to be her prison from now on. Jason explained she would have a wing of the house to herself, and besides her bedroom she had a few other rooms to occupy her time with. The library was very nice and she had a few computers with internet connection, but it was a very limited on what she could do online. No calling for help over the internet, Emily figured out much later. The backyard had a playset that would be the envy of most public parks, and her bedroom was fit for a visiting royal princess. What impressed Emily the most was the bathroom that was all hers. The closest stall to the door had a child-size pink toilet in it, with a larger pink toilet in the next stall for when she got older. She had both a shower and bathtub area. Calling the tub a tub was an insult, because she could do laps in the small indoor pool where she was to bathe herself. "Okay, honey, you will have all the time in the world to see your new home. It's past your new bedtime now. I want you in that bed and asleep when I check on you in a few minutes," Jason said, looking overjoyed now to have Emma as his daughter Emily. "Yes, Daddy," Emily said, and got a playful pat on her butt as she trotted off for the bedroom. All the stuff was still very nice, but it was still a prison to Emma's point of view. Jason came in a few minutes later, and Emily had her eyes shut tightly. She was breathing deep, slow breaths, appearing to be fast asleep now. The door shut and locked as Jason left the room. Emily waited a minute more before she opened her eyes and looked around. She was trapped into a gilded cage. There were toys, games, and enough to delight the heart of any little girl in the world. Emma knew she'd grow to hate it all in the end. Emma was buying her time. One day, Jason, "You are going to call me Mommy, and I will lock you away in a gold cage just like this one someday," Emily said, making a promise to herself, and grinned as a mental image flashed inside her head of a toddler named Jason. He was looking up at his new mommy on the verge of crying, showing on his round chubby face. His eyes were like a puppy's dog, with a deep begging expression in them as his lower lip trembled just a little. In one chubby little hand he held up an empty baby bottle with little drops of milk still dripping from his chin. The final touch to the mental image Emily could see as clear as day now was the sagging diaper he held up with his other hand, because he just wet himself. Emily went to sleep with a smile on her face, because one day Jason would slip up with the time device and she would show him how wonderful a mother she could be. Takeover Part 2 by Libra and JEFFR 2 by It was now days after Emma's last visit to Building 7. Emma, now known as Emily, had been reduced to a 6-year-old girl by her old boss Jason King. Jason had prepared nearly half his house for her, and Emily called him Daddy now. Emily had played on the computers and found them very limited on what she could download and send out. Emily tried to relax and pass the time with mindless TV watching. It was when she was flipping through the news channel that her name had caught her attention. Emma Hurst was believed to be the driver of this car and is now thought to be dead after a police investigation. Her funeral will be held this Friday at a private location, because Jason King will be attending the service in honor of her memory. A newswoman said, and the TV screen flashed a picture of a car being dragged out of a river. Due to the river's fast current because of recent rains, it remains unclear if her body will ever be found, the newswoman said, and then she switched to a story about a recent scandal. "Jason," Emily yelled, and taking a risk using his name. He preferred for her to call him Daddy. "Emily, how many times must I say it? I'm your father now. Call me Daddy," Jason said, and stopped as he looked down at a very mad 6-year-old girl. Despite her size, he paused just for a second. "Okay, what is it?" Jason asked, seeing he at least better to hear her out. "Apparently I'm dead. Drowned in a river after my car went off into the water," Emily said, and watched as Jason understood.
I was tying up loose ends. Would you have rather just disappeared without a trace? Make your friends and family worry about you for years? Jason asked reasonably.
No, but my parents. The grief they must be feeling now. Emily said, thinking of her parents she hadn't seen in almost 2 years.
Emily, I saw your phone records. You haven't called your parents in over a year now.
That was before you got involved with trying to find me.
I did a thoroughly background check on you. It was my understanding you had some type of falling out with them.
One of the neighbors talked to one of my people.
Jason said, and sitting on the bed so Emily could lean into him.
You shouldn't pry into a woman's life.
Emily said, but she did lean against him.
So what was it?
Opinions on which college or money? Jason asked, and Emily knew he was trying to make her feeling better by talking about it.
Babies. My mother wanted me to settle down and give her grandchildren. I just finished college and was climbing the business ladder. I told her I didn't want children yet and I still had all the time in the world. My father seemed to think I needed a man in my life.
How she would be thrilled to see me now.
Emily said, looking at her little hands and still a little clumsy with them.
Well, you are going to see her soon.
I was going to tell you tonight, but right now is as good as ever.
Would you care to attend your own funeral?
Jason asked, and Emily pulled away from him, looking at him.
He was being serious about it.
I hate what you did to me sometimes.
Emily said, and pounded a fist into his chest.
A thought went across her mind: even if she could escape from his loving care, she wouldn't go back to her family as a little girl.
Ah, but you don't hate me, do you?
This is as close as we can get to a relationship.
As father and daughter.
Jason said back to her while he rubbed his chest just a little, and Emily looked away.
So we are going then.
I have a black dress picked out for you, and I must warn your outfit will be bugged, so I will be listening in on any conversations you will have.
Pretty please with sugar on top, say you will go.
Jason said, tickled her just a little.
Stop it.
Emily said, half joking with him now.
It might have been morbid, but she did want to attend her own funeral just to see who would be there.
Most of all, she wanted to see her family once more, because it could be months or even years before she'd get a chance to turn the tables on Jason.
Emily had a promise she made to herself to keep.
Okay, I will go.
Just stop tickling me for an answer.
Emily said, giggling, and he halted his attack on her.
I will leave you in peace then, but I want a rematch on that one video game.
You kicked my butt last time we played.
Jason said as he got up and left her room through the open door.
Emily didn't say it out loud, but there was another relationship he didn't consider between them.
One day, Jason, you will be younger and I will be older.
I will be mommy and you will be my child.
Emily whispered and thought about the temporal field generator.
Because of that time device, he had gotten revenge on two horrible women.
Then he had turned the device on the person who saved him.
Emily understood why he did it sometimes.
Jason had trust issues with women since he'd been held against his will for months on end.
Emily hadn't seen the time device in days, and she was being careful not to mention it.
Emily was going to try reason and guilt on him first.
When Friday came, Emily liked the black dress he picked out for her and briefly looked for any hidden video cameras or microphones on it, but couldn't see any.
Emily didn't doubt he had lied about it.
Jason was always sure to tell her the truth, and every once in a while he would omit it unless she asked about something in detail.
Jason came in and told her she needed to dye her hair or he would do it for her with bleach.
Emily, given the choice of dyeing the hair a deeper color or losing all her hair color, went with the more respectable choice.
Her hair was black and would match her dress now.
Emily thought she looked like a little goth kid now, but Jason told she looked very well for someone going to their own funeral.
I must say you look very lively for a dead person.
Jason said, and Emily gave him an amused smile.
They rode in the back of a black limousine, and Emily watched as the trees rolled by, and then they came to a highway seemingly in the middle of nowhere.
After that, it took some time as usual to get to the outskirts of the city.
It wasn't long before they came to a graveyard, and the sky was growing cloudy.
It was raining only a little bit, but Jason had it covered as he bought out an umbrella.
Emily stayed close to him, holding his hand like a good little girl.
I hope I can trust you, Emily. Jason said quietly, and he didn't threaten, but Emily was unsure what he would do.
Emily decided she would stay quiet about who she really was. Besides, she didn't have any plans in escaping anyway. There was no freshly dug grave, because there was no body to bury. Instead, everyone was gathering around a headstone with her name on it. Emily saw her birthday some 25 years ago, with the date of her death being the day of the accident. Emily looked and saw beloved daughter and sister there as well, with a little angel was beside the name. Emily looked up to see her parents and her younger sister there. Everyone dressed in black. Emily's eyes traveled over the crowd and spotted people she knew from work and even an old boyfriend she once had. Emily didn't think he cared so much about her since she could see a wedding ring on his finger. The sermon started and everyone lowered their heads. The rain increased as the priest ended the sermon, then they went to the funeral's wake. Thankfully, it was held inside and it was a nice funeral home. Jason King had paid for everything. People laughed and smiled as they shared stories about Emma Hurst. Emily, being the only child there, was able to slip in and out of the adult groups listening in. It was interesting hearing people talk about her, and most of the stories were good things about her. Few people cried, but because they wanted to remember Emma with happy memories. Emily saw her parents and sister again. Her younger sister seemed to be consoling her mother. Then her mother got up and excused herself into a back room. Emily knew what the rooms were for. Such rooms were used so a person could cry their eyes out in private. "You there?" Emma's real father asked, and she looked up at a man she loved. He looked at her, and there was something in her face that seemed to disturb him just a little bit. "King's daughter, aren't you?" Emma's father asked. "Yes." Emily answered, mindful of the listening devices somewhere planted in her dress. Emily spared a glance for her sister and thought how she would die to know her big sister was younger than her, now standing before her. "I would like to speak with your father for a minute. I understood he personally trained my daughter when she got her last promotion," Emma's father said, and Emily pointed back the way she came. "Thank you, young lady," Emma's father said, and Emily waited until they were out of earshot. "Be nice to him, Jason," Emily said to one of her dress buttons, but couldn't tell if she had the right one. Emily waited till no one was looking, and then she slipped into the room where her mother was. There was a sniffle, and Emily turned to see her mother putting away a handkerchief. "Hello, what is your name, little one?" Emma's mother asked, and made sure her face was tear-free now. "Emily King." "I'm 6 years old," Emily said, and like she had practiced for hours on end with Jason, held up her little fingers. "King's little girl. Does that make you a princess then?" "You are the daughter of a king," Emma's mother said sweetly, and Emily had to smile at that. "My daddy thinks I'm a princess," Emily answered, and thought this was a mistake to be here now. "Would you mind if I could hold you a minute? I had a daughter just like you once," Emma's mother said, and didn't open her arms, but patted her lap. Emily almost tripped on her feet as she moved forward. Emily climbed onto her mother's lap. "Let's get a proper look at you," Emma's mother said, and cupped Emily's chin gently. Emily was scared for a moment when her mother paused and stared at her. "It is amazing, but you look like my Emma," but Emma's mother said, and Emily was screaming a single thought. "Don't say it, mother, please," Emily thought furiously. She didn't have a black spot on her face, Emma's mother said, and wiped a little black smudge away with her gloved hand from Emily's face. "So is your mother around?" Emma's mother asked. "No, she is gone. Just me and Daddy," Emily said quickly, and hoped Jason didn't have a living person posing as her new mother. "Oh. When did you see her last?" Emma's mother asked, if understanding something. "2 years ago," Emily answered, and fought back a tear. She wanted to confess right there. "I'm Emma. I didn't die in a car crash. I was turned into a little girl again. I will come back home real soon. I just have one little thing to do." Emily's thoughts raced through her head, but she stayed quiet and answered her mother's questions. "Did you get a chance to say goodbye to her?" Emma's mother asked.
No. Emily answered, and there was a sad look on her face. Neither did I will make you a deal. I'm going to hug you tightly and say goodbye to my daughter, then you can hug me right back just as hard to say goodbye to your mother. Emma's mother said and opened her arms. Emily found herself in a bear hug as she heard her mother say goodbye, Emma. Goodbye, Mommy. Emily said and thought just maybe for a second her mother knew the truth. Thank you for that. You don't know how much I needed that. I really should see to my other daughter. In her condition, she comes out here adding more stress to her life. Emma's mother said, and slowly Emily slid off her mother's lap. Is she sick? Emily asked, concerned for her younger sister. Emily made the question as innocent as she could. Not really. I don't know if you are old enough to understand this, but she is going to have a baby. She promised me to name the baby Emma if it's a girl. Emma's mother said and had a smile on her face as she left the room. The door shut and Emily was left alone in the private room. Goodbye, Mom, I love you. Send my love to Dad. Emily said quietly and cried a little as she took the warm seat where her mother had sat. A minute later the door opened and Jason came in. Come here, princess. Jason said, and Emily ran to him, burying her face into him and bawled like a baby. Look at me bawling like a baby. Emily said, wiping her eyes dry now. You know I could let you go back to your family in some months. Let's just say, what if your sister happens to have twins then doesn't remember it? I could pay a doctor to dope her so much when she is giving birth she wouldn't even remember how many babies came out. Just think, aunt and niece, or perhaps you will have a nephew instead sharing the same crib. Jason offered, and Emily saw the sadness in his eyes at the thought of losing her. You would miss me too much. No, Jason, I'm keeping my adult mind. I want to remember who I am. Even if I can never go back to my first family. Besides, my mom raised me once already and I was enough of a burden the first time around. Emily said and looked hard at her adopted father. Emily loved him very much and only hated a little. I know I have trust issues, but so far I think I'm doing pretty well as a father. Jason admitted and looked unsure of himself. So you heard every word? Emily asked as he picked her up and held her in his arms. Yeah, I think we got a good start to fully trusting each other. Jason said and moved his hair out of the way to show an earpiece in his ear. As long as you don't have a hidden camera in my bathroom. Emily said and watched his face. She was half joking because no matter how old she was, he didn't like girls in a sexual way. No, but the hallway between rooms there is one. Are you concerned I will see you naked? Jason asked, chuckling. It was a silly thing to be worried about. No. You dress me and give me baths, but a girl needs her privacy sometimes. Emily answered, blushing only a little bit. It was silly to have a crush on him. Emily knew she could be drop-dead beautiful with a horny teenage body and he wouldn't be interested in her due to his sexual preference. I'm really surprised so many people turned out. I ran into an old boyfriend of yours and after a drink or two he told me about the time you went skinny dipping with him down at Palm Beach. Jason said, and Emily had a shocked look on her face. He didn't. Emily said, wanting to go kick her old boyfriend in the shin for telling. It had been her idea in the first place. Well, at least he waited till you passed on from his world. Jason said, chuckling, and he carried her back to the waiting limo. Another week passed and Jason realized he needed help maintaining the house he set up for Emily. Soon a nanny and housekeeper were added. The limo driver pulled double duty as a handyman and gardener when he wasn't driving Mr. King around. Emily found the door to her wing of the house now left unlocked and she knew Jason just trusted her just a little bit more. Emily wasn't sure of the nanny Miss Potts because she was a somewhat stern woman, but Farron became her teacher. Emily learned she was to study other languages. Something her father requested for her to do. Emily thought no doubt because he learned Russia it saved their asses once. The nanny was a young woman, but looked like she had years of experience with children. Your father, Mr. King, informed me you have a wild imagination, but as long as you can focus on your studies we will get along. Miss Potts said sternly after introducing herself.
Emily soon learned that Miss Potts would only come over for a few days a week. Emily guessed all the servants knew that Mr. King's daughter liked to tell tall tales. More insurance in her not getting a message out or getting someone on her side. The maid Miss Etta was an older woman, but young enough to still turn men's head. Emily didn't like her at all because she fussed at her when one of her toys was out of place. Emily could tell she didn't work around children a lot or perhaps just envy her a little. Danny, their driver, handyman, and gardener seemed to think the world of Emily. Emily always helped him when the job wasn't too dangerous and he was eager to teach her about repairing things. Hearing Emily was a child prodigy of sorts and seeing it was two different things. Jason spent most of his time either with Emily or in his private office if he wasn't away taking care of business. Emily knew he still had ties to genetic labs and access to places no other stockholder could go. He made a point to own the businesses while investing in several law firms. It was weeks later when Jason announced that Emily was going with him to a party. Just a business deal that had a plus one invitation to it. Emily was almost overwhelmed by the diamond earrings and gold bracelets he got for her to wear. Emily admitted to herself she really liked the idea of going out to an upper-class party once more. With the maid's help, Emily got dressed as Jason did her hair. Emily was more dressed up than she ever had been as an adult. Emily thought as she looked like a doll wearing makeup. When they got to the party, Emily felt small and very much like her young physical age. Emily discovered she was the only child there besides some babies too young to leave their mother's breasts just yet. Little old ladies pinched her cheeks and out of respect toward Mr. King, young men had kissed her hand when they came over to introduce themselves to him. Emily was either getting too much attention or being completely ignored during the party. When the social gathering was coming close to the end, Emily was getting very sleepy. Like most children her age, she now needed daily naps or she found herself in an emotional state she couldn't control at first. "Okay, little lady, we are going home," Jason said, picking her up and holding her against his body. "It's okay. I'm just a little tired," Emily said, not wanting to ruin Jason's evening. The protest was ruined when she let out a deep yawn and her eyelids felt so very heavy. When Emily awoke, she had to dress and get ready for the nanny who was coming to teach her. Jason sometimes sat in so he could learn a few words in Spanish or French. As the nanny left for the day, Emily noticed something about her jewelry collection she hadn't noticed that morning. "Daddy, did you take the earrings to be cleaned or safekeeping?" Emily asked, unable to find them among her jewelry box. "No, I haven't seen them since I put you to bed last night," Jason answered and went over to the box himself and looked. "I swore I put them in here. I was tired, but I know I put them away," Emily said, looking around the dresser top, then went on all fours to inspect the floor. "Don't you worry about it. I'm sure they will turn up in a day or two," Jason said, and he did remember Emily had removed them. Then he helped her to her own bed and retired to his own bed last night. "Don't wear yourself thin over it. I will get you new ones," Jason said, and left the room so Emily could be alone. When Jason reviewed the security camera from the hallway, he felt slightly betrayed. At first he suspected the nanny since she recently been in Emily's room, but he'd been there too with her learning new languages himself. He hadn't seen her go anywhere near the dresser. Rewinding the footage even further back, he saw who it was. Jason decided that tonight in the guest bedroom and on the other side of the house he would set up a show for the thief. The maid was called over to the guest bedroom to clean it up a little bit. What she didn't expect was for Jason to pull a gun on her, then fire on her in a flash of movement. The dart landed in her chest and he helped her to the bed after catching her. The other servants had the night off and wouldn't be back till morning. Emily was locked into her own wing of the house just for tonight. Jason knew he didn't have to wonder about her anyway. She rarely woke up at night unless it was the call of nature. Jason fixed the dresser mirror so it showed the maid's reflection back at her, then he undressed her. Then Jason got out the straps and silk ropes and tied her to the posts of the bed. This left her spread eagle and Jason approved of the embarrassing picture he made of her. He had been careful in picking the servants.
Most came from respectable backgrounds, and best of all, they had no close family members that would miss them. Jason opened a briefcase he kept locked away in a safe inside a hidden room not even Emily knew about. Within Jason's bedroom there was a secret door which led into a nursery. Sometimes Jason found it hard to relax or sleep, so he would go into the other room and climb into the giant crib. The crib was suitable for an adult or baby. Jason used it for a bed when he needed rest. Jason thought Emily would get a good laugh out of that. Sometimes Jason didn't feel at home in a bed without wooden bars. The briefcase, when opened, had a collection of viral injections that did far more than make people sick for a little while. All of the viruses could physically change a person one way or another. Some of them were fates worse than death, so Jason thought. Some could change your gender into various human forms or cover you in light fur. Jason smiled as he browsed through the bees. Just before bigger breasts, he found baldness and picked that one out. From his robe pocket he pulled out the time device, also from his hidden room usually kept under the crib just in case of an accident happen. He wanted it in a low spot where he could reach it. Jason set the controls on it and used it to make the old mate into a young one. Her bonds held and Jason adjusted them so she couldn't escape. The only door in and out of the room was locked, also this guest bedroom had been soundproofed. "Miss Etta, be kind enough to wake up," Jason said, and ready the TV remote in his hand. He had the burned DVD already set up to play. The maid Miss Etta stirred, then realized she was tied up against her will. "What the devil?" Miss Etta said and heard her voice, then looked about. She saw Mr. King, then looked over at the mirror. There was a younger nude version of herself in the reflection. "Miss Etta, I have turned you into a younger maid rather than an old maid because I want you to understand part of the power I have. Some earrings have come up missing in my house. Earrings I gave to Emily, which have vanished after the party we came back from." Jason said, not accusing anyone yet, but wanted to see what her reaction would be. "Children lose things. You should check the floor of her room. I have no idea what has happened to those earrings. How did you make me younger?" Miss Etta said, and then realized there was a bigger mystery, at least from her point of view. "Did you know I have hidden cameras in this house? One is cleverly hidden in the hallway outside Emily's room," Jason said, and played the DVD. The video was short, but clearly showed Miss Etta entered Emily's bedroom, then leave a minute later tucking something into her pocket. "You can't prove anything with that." "Doing my duties I was," Miss Etta said, trying to free at least one hand. "I watched the video several times and you are the only one who had a chance to take the earrings. I must apologize now because I've been in your room. The cameras clearly show you go in there and come back a minute later. Unlucky for you, the door was left open and I saw you put something in the back part of the drawer where you keep your unmentionables. I checked the drawer and not only did I found the earrings, but one of the bracelets even I didn't know were missing just yet," Jason said, and fast forward the video a little bit. The video images showed everything, and given what he found there only proved without a doubt she did it. "Please sir, I needed the money. If you could forgive me, I will let you have my body as a reward," Miss Etta said, and moved her hips just so Jason would have noticed. "I have friends in key spots to check records like bank accounts. Miss Etta, you are highly paid as my housekeeper, or if you preferred, maid. From the records I reviewed before hiring you, I noticed the large bank account you have. You have no need for the money. I even checked into your family and know for a fact no one in your family needs any money of the pawn some the earrings would get you. Besides, you don't have any close family anymore," Jason said, and watched her carefully. He made sure to hire people who could go missing without any close family members to wonder where they went. "You want the truth, Mr. King? I will tell you, I worked for several families with children. I watched their parents spoil them rotten. Then a maid like me gets blamed sooner or later for a broken vase or window. Then they are politely dismissed from the house just to start the process later. So I take just a little bit of jewelry here and there from children, because their parents always promise to replace it when the child finally takes notice. I seen enough brats like your little bastard girl, so why shouldn't I get rich along the way?
Miss Etta said then asked. Jason raised his hand to slap her hard, but he halted his hand just in time for Emily's sake. She wouldn't want him to strike a lady mostly because she would do it herself. Miss Etta flinched then noticed he wasn't going to strike her. Well then Miss Etta, just in case you didn't notice, you have been wearing the earrings this whole time. I put them on you while you slept as a going away gift. As an understanding adult, I am sure Emily will understand when I tell her I let you keep them. I guess it didn't occur to you that Emily could be far older than she looks. Maybe an adult turned child? Jason asked and watched at Miss Etta was figuring it out. It could be true. Miss Etta said, realizing her mistake in stealing the jewelry. She is more of a lady than you. In fact, you can never hope to match her maturity. I'm going to make sure you never will again. Jason said furiously at her as he pulled out the time device. He had it preset already to make her only 2 years old. Somehow a temper tantrum 2 years old Miss Etta seemed proper after what he heard. Miss Elena Etta shrank out of her bonds, but she only made it halfway to the door when she hit her toddler years. Jason caught her and put her over his knees. Elena kicked and screamed to be let loose, but Jason wasn't going to spank her. Ouch! Elena said a moment later when he stuck her with a needle injecting her with something. Ouch, what the hell are those? Elena asked, trying to see her own little butt. This one is called Pridit, Jason said, and feeling his angry fade away now. Elena was crying now, but in great sobs as tears of pain fell. It felt like two bees had stung her twice, with one on the left butt cheek and then on the right cheek. Jason let her down off his lap and Elena ran a little distance away, then attempted to see her own ass. What the hell did you do to me? Elena asked, rubbing her tender spots. I cursed you, Jason answered, realizing what he just did to her. With what? Elena asked, now looking very scared. First needle will cause you to lose all your body hair forever. Second needle had been designed to make you like a child and young looking. Not a midget, but you will appear to stop aging when you turn 11 years old again. Your internal organs will keep aging, but outward you will never appear to be more than an 11-year-old child, Jason said, realizing the horror of her new future would be. He meant only to make her go through life as a bald person. In his rage, he'd given her a second needle because it felt good to do so. You're lying. Use that device to make me older, Elena said, pointing at the time device still loosely held in Jason's free hand. I will set it for 20 years old then, Jason said, and showed her he moved the toggle knob to 20 marks. Elena went over to the front of the dresser and stood in front of it so the tilted mirror now caught her reflection. Looking up, she watched as her body grew into a little girl, then into a very young teenage girl, and stopped. The hair on her head had fallen out and Elena had caught some of it, but it was a useless gesture on her part. Elena looked at her young bald body and noticed her breasts were only half formed. Worst of all was her head, for it was bald and looked too large for her body. The best she could hope for was to wear wigs and stuffed an A-cup size bra with tissues to give herself any curves. I'd rather die. Kill me, Elena said, and turned toward Jason. I can, Elena. I don't murder people, Jason answered. Damn you, Elena said, and jumped over the bed onto Jason. Jason had the time device already set to reduce anyone into a 2-month baby. He fired as Elena landed on him and the device went flying from his hand, but its work for the night was done. Jason grabbed her arms and as Elena struggled, she grew younger again. No, please. Drown me. I can grope like this. I don't want to be a brat forever, Elena screamed as Jason held her wrists as he held her tight to his body. Elena screamed in rage and tears as she fought like a hellcat to get loose. Soon the hellcat was reduced to a hell kitten as she went into a deep sobbing fit. It's okay, Elena. I got orphanages and important people in place. I will see you are given to a loving family, and just for you I will make sure they will have money. The earrings are yours now and the gold bracelet. We will call it severance pay.
Jason said, taking his hands from her wrists and just held her while he rubbed her back as she re-entered toddlerhood once more. Jason held her until she couldn't cry anymore and she was reduced to a mere 2-month-old bald baby girl. "Don't worry, Elena Etta. In 2 weeks you won't remember your old life or me. You will forget all of this. Some good news, your ears are still pierced. I will make sure the earrings will be handed over to your new parents," Jason said and carried her to his nursery after he picked up the time device. He would come right back before the morning light and clean everything up, then Jason would make it appear that Miss Etta left during the night. Jason made the usual arrangement and Elena was taken away during the night as prearranged with no questions asked. Later someone would write up a report she was found abandoned on the steps of a church. Jason knew he had to do more for her since she would have a rough childhood and her adult life would be a living hell unless he figured out how to make her life better. The risk of changing her DNA twice could have killed her. If he attempted a third try on her body, she would reject any more changes. Even the human body became immune to the specially designed retroviruses. A day later, Jason reported the missing earrings to the police and his number one suspect, a maid by the name of Elena Etta. Despite the police had gotten her bank accounts frozen and watched her credit cards, there was no trace ever found of her again. Further background checks into her past employers found that there was a history of stuff going missing from other households when she worked there. The other servants were shocked or acted like they were, but Emily suspected something else. Emily waited until they were alone in his private office after he got done talking to the police. What really happened to her? Emily asked, not sure she wanted to know the whole truth. Part of her had to know if Jason was turning into someone like Belle with the power he had hidden away. "Emily, I imagine right now she is a very fussy 2-month-old baby. Oh, I let her keep the earrings as part of her severance pay. You might notice one of your gold bracelets missing too. She took that too," Jason answered and saw Emily was giving him a hard stare. "What else? Did you inject her with anything like Belle and Helga?" Emily asked sternly and looked for older than she outwardly appeared. "Yes, and you will sleep better at night if you don't ask what. I'm a little ashamed of it myself. She called you a name and I lost my temper for a moment," Jason said and was putting more of a stern tone into his words. "Okay, I won't ask you today, but I think I have the right to know what she said about me," Emily said, seeing she wasn't get all the details this day, but maybe in few weeks she would work up the courage to ask again. "She said you were a bastard child. Apparently she didn't approve of children out of wedlock, and from what she told me she didn't really like any children at all. Ironic now," Jason answered and saw Emily was confused by his last comment. "I will tell you another day, honey," Jason said and waved her out of the room. Emily knew she had reached her limit as far as questions. If she pushed him now, he might remember he was the father of the family and tan her butt for forgetting. Weeks went by before Emily got bored with reading books and playing with her childish things. Jason allowed her more time in his private office with him, and slowly she was learning all about his investments while she sat next to him. Some of Jason's business friends who stopped by for meetings were a little disturbed that they were talking about very private business information with a child in the room. Jason would only smile and said Emily needed to learn the business one day. Emily was embarrassed when he called her gifted or extremely smart. She had to swear to keeping secrets whenever these meetings were held. It was another 3 months before anything really interesting happened at the King household. Of course, they hired a new maid by the name of Ida Watts. She was younger than the last one and only came in every other day like the ninny. Jason was discussing how much money he should pour into the cancer research with Emily when the door to his office opened suddenly. Jason's hand went under the desk faster than Emily noticed at first, but Jason stopped in mid-motion when he saw Detective Boone standing there. "I'm sorry, Mr. King. I told him you were busy, but he forced his way past me," Ida said, standing behind the detective. "It's quite all right, Ida. I usually like for the police to make an appointment, but perhaps they finally caught Miss Etta," Jason said, waving for Ida to attend to her other duties. "No, not yet. There are things I would like to discuss with you.
it might be best if you send the girl away. Detective Boone said, and Emily looked at the man. He was tall, rough-looking and had hard eyes that seen too much murder and blood. My daughter is a gifted child. She understands everything and I will just tell her later so to save time she will stay, Jason said and looked at Emily if asking her. Emily nodded and Detective Boone didn't look happy about it. Very well. I won't sugarcoat it then. I don't like you, Mr. King. Maybe you heard of cops' instincts before, but I can sense you're hiding something. I can help, but notice women in your life disappear without a trace. Detective Boone said and paused, studying Jason's face. Emily looked from Jason to the detective and saw Jason had a good poker face. He took a seat then and Detective Boone then slowly took a notebook from his inner coat pocket. He consulted it carefully. Miss Elena Etta disappeared from your employment after stealing some earrings without closing her bank accounts first. If I went on the run, I want every dime I could get. Miss Emma Hurst supposedly drowned after crashing her car into the river, which I suspected was faked. Miss Bellinley's body is also missing as well. Cremated, so I'm told, after she lost her life giving birth to her child. Not to mention the questionable history around Building 7. During your extended vacation around that time, the entire building's staff and several board members in your old company completely vanished. I checked the records and made calls. None of them can be reached. In fact, no one knows where they are. Do you know what they all have in common? Detective Boone asked, now apparently done flipping through his notebook. Me, of course. Jason answered, and Emily thought he looked just a little too smug in saying it. Yes, Mr. Jason King. One-time company leader turned investor. I looked into your business investments. Cancer research, orphanages, research labs doing very secret work seeking cures, and now housing development with a school named after you just miles down the road from here. Do you have a lot of guilt, Mr. King? Detective Boone asked. Detective Boone. I have many regrets and a lot of guilt in my life for the decisions I made as a businessman. When my company was on its way to the top, I had to step on a lot of people to make it happen. Thousands lost their jobs because of me, and those who played the stock market recklessly lost their fortunes when they didn't think the underdog like my company wasn't going to come on top. I was so sick with myself I hired a ruthless woman named Bellinley to train to take my place. Undoubtedly you know that she had a nervous breakdown after a few months and I came back to save my company. Shortly after that I handed my company over to the board while becoming a major investor at the same time. Where you see guilt is simply a man making up for legal business decisions that ruin thousands of people. If I could save millions in the future, perhaps one day I could live with myself in peace. Jason explained with his fingers now calmly interlocked, and Emily saw it pained him to talk about the company and Miss Sindley. Then you wouldn't mind consenting to a full house search in the grounds? Detective Boone asked and looked like he knew the answer. Detective Boone. I must say no to your question unless you can obtain a warrant. If you think I am some kind of murderer who likes pretty young women, then let me dismiss you of that idea. I find you very attractive rather than a horny teenage girl throwing herself on me. Jason answered, and Emily saw he had surprised Detective Boone for once. The look of shock was there only for a few seconds, but he recovered quickly. Somehow, Mr. King, I don't think that is your only secret. This isn't the last time you will see me. Detective Boone said, getting up and held out his hand in a farewell handshake. Jason took it, and even Emily saw them testing each other's strength. After the detective left the room, Jason turned toward a mounted flat-screen TV on the wall. Emily hardly noticed it now of days, since all it showed was security feed from the cameras. Jason picked up a remote and focused the parts to show Mr. Boone leaving. The detective paused from time to time looking out windows and noticing room sizes, then he left the house altogether. He thinks himself as a Sherlock Holmes character, and I must look like Jack the Ripper to him without leaving behind bodies. Jason said, noticing the detective noticed that the house had more to it than it appeared on the outside. It's funny, it was almost like he was searching for a secret room. You don't have one, do you, Jason? Emily asked in a joking comment and got silence until she looked at him.
Just beyond my bedroom before my private bathroom door there is another room. Please don't ask me what is in there besides my other safe. Jason answered as he always answered her with the truth. I think I know what you keep hidden there, but I won't say it. Emily said, making a motion of zipping her lips. Jason never mentioned the device directly and Emily made a point not to mention it. Days later, Detective Boone did his best to get a warrant and every judge turned him down. Simply enough, there wasn't any evidence. When Boone's boss said maybe he should take some time off or transfer out, he now knew Mr. King had power even within the law system. Detective Boone even knew about Mr. King's lawyers and he had one of the best in his back pocket. Even if Boone could prove the man killed someone, it was unlikely he would serve many years behind bars. Maybe later Detective Boone would regret what he did. That night Boone left his badge on his living room table and took only his gun. Lightning flashed as thunder rumbled in the distance as he left the house. Dressed in only a pair of child panties, Emily was still up putting away a book in her library when she heard something. The storm had been loud and kept her from sleeping. It was late and she was out of bed, so Emily didn't call out. Instead, she crept around corners. Oddly enough, she thought she heard a raised voice. Emily walked down the hall quietly until she came to the open door of Jason's office. Emily knew he kept it locked at all times unless he was inside. Emily found Danny wearing his night clothes on the floor in Jason's office. "Danny?" Emily called, seeing the driver plus handyman knocked out. He had a knot on the back of his head that would leave him with a headache later. He was breathing, so Emily didn't worry. More puzzling was the state of Jason's office. Desk drawers had been pulled out and dumped onto the floor. The wall safe was open and Emily could see the stacks of money left untouched. Emily remembered the spot where Jason's hand went when Detective Boone burst into the room. "Well, hello, old friend," Emily said, pulling out her old dart gun. It was loaded and ready to fire. Jason had rigged it under the desk for easy reach. Emily was forced to carry it two-handed, but she was strong enough to wield it. Emily made a note to thank Jason for the jungle gym place set in the backyard. Over the sound of the hard rain, Emily heard voices being raised and thought she knew the voice. Looking at the messy room and untouched money in the safe, she figured it out quickly. Detective Boone had broken in and searched the office himself. Danny, either awakened by noise of the storm or Detective Boone tearing up Jason's office, happened to come by the office. Emily didn't waste any more time, but carefully went down the hallways toward Jason's bedroom. The door was opened wide and Emily could hear them talking. "Mr. King, I measured out my steps the last time I was here. You have a secret room through that wall. Either you show me where the door is or I'm going to start shooting up the wall until I can see through it." Detective Boone threatened and Emily risked a glance in. Jason was standing in the middle of the room with his hands halfway up as Detective Boone held a gun in his right hand. Currently the gun was pointed at the wall, but a quick motion he could turn it on Jason. "Very well, Detective Boone. I'm sorry to say you won't like what you will find," Jason answered and calmly went over to a wall space just before you turned into the bathroom. Jason slowly reached over and pushed a part of the trim on the wall, then Emily watched as that part of the wall swung inward. Detective Boone motioned with the gun and they went into the room. Emily ran over to the wall and peeked inside the hidden room herself. "You see, Detective Boone, it's a nursery with a crib big enough for a doll to sleep in. I find it comforting some nights to remember more simple days," Jason said, gesturing about the room, and even went over to the crib to slow pat the mattress still wrapped in plastic, covered with a sheet. As Emily looked in, she saw it was indeed almost the same nursery he'd been had captive for months on end. It even had the smell of baby powder in the room, if only very faint. "Oh God. My entire career down the drain over a man with a fetish for baby stuff," Detective Boone said, lowering the gun a little, but looking like a man lost. "No one needs to know about this, Detective Boone. You told me you knocked out Danny. I can convince him not to press charges. Just put the gun away," Jason said, and Emily saw that Jason was reaching for something when Detective Boone was looking at his gun for just a second. "No,
Don't do it, Jason, Emily screamed with her mind.
Hey, hands where I can see them.
Detective Boone said, raising his gun up, but his hand had started shaking. There was a loud pop as the gun went off and Jason jerked back.
No.
Emily screamed and stood in the doorway like an idiot. Later she realized she should have leaned around the corner and fired. Instead, Emily fired her dart gun just as Detective Boone turned and fired his gun, aiming about the middle of the body on an adult. Emily closed her eyes as the gun fired from Detective Boone and she felt the bullet just miss her. When Emily jerked her eyes back open, she saw Detective Boone looking white as a sheet. He realized he almost killed the child. He looked down at the dart and took only a step before landing on the floor. Because of training, he never dropped his gun. Emily looked back at the hidden door and saw a hole in it just a foot above her head. A funny thought passed through her head as she thanked God she didn't have her growth spurt yet.
Jason,
Emily said, dropping her dart gun and running over to him. He was groaning as he sat against the wall, blood spreading down his nightshirt through a nice clean hole. The bullet passed through my body and just missed my heart, I think, but one of my lungs is damaged. I could breathe right. Jason said, gasping for breath, and held a hand on the wound as he clutched at the leg of the crib to help with the pain. Emily looked under the crib and found the long-desired time device on a custom-made shelf next to a briefcase. Over half a year later in Jason's house, and it was in her hands for the first time in her life. Emily saw the controls were easy enough to use and set the device to make a person 3 years old. Emily was pretty sure she could handle a toddler-sized Jason even with her 7-year-old body. Finally, you get your chance for revenge. Judging from that one nod, I say it's back to diapers for me. Jason said, looking like a man ready to face his final hour.
No, Jason. I'm not doing this for revenge or even power like Belle did. I made a promise my first night here.
You never considered our relationship could be reversed, did you? Emily said and fired the device at him. The wound healed instantly and Jason took off his stained shirt, then stood up as he got younger. Jason had no concern for modesty, but used the shirt to wipe away some of the blood still sticking to his body.
Here, little boy. Clean yourself up. Stay right here and I will see to Detective Boone.
Emily said, tossing down a package of baby wipes, and Jason took them as he wiped his body clean of his own blood. Emily went to Detective Boone and checked his pockets after she picked up his gun to lie on a changing table. Emily only found his billfold, car keys, handcuffs. Keys to the handcuffs were the only things in his pockets. Emily handcuffed Detective Boone with his hands behind his back and she made them a tight fit. Tonight she wasn't being gentle to a man that almost killed a man she came to love as a second father figure in her life. Emily set the device to make him into a young teenager again. Then she tightened the handcuffs again before he could wake up.
Oh, Detective Boone.
Emily said, making her voice sing with his name.
Emily, are you okay?
Detective Boone asked as he awoke with a start and realized he was handcuffed and lying on the floor of a nursery with a little toddler boy playing with baby wipes. Then he realized the toddler was cleaning the blood off his body.
My voice sounds funny. Where did that little boy come from?
Where is your father?
Mr. Boone asked, looking from her to the little boy.
There wasn't an adult in sight.
That is Jason King over there.
This device in my hands can change people's age.
Emily said, deciding to start slow.
Listen, little girl, I don't have time for made-up stories.
Your father is hurt and needs a doctor.
Detective Boone said and attempted to get out of the handcuffs.
Emily had put them on pretty tight.
Little girl.
Emily said and looked down at herself.
Currently she was a panty-clad 7-year-old girl holding what appeared to be a fancy flashlight. No wonder he wasn't taking her serious.
I'd rather do this in private, but if seeing is believing.
Emily said and pulled off her underwear as she got a confused look from Mr. Boone.
Jason only giggled as she prepared to fire the device on herself.
Emily set the device for 25 years old and pushed the button.
Sweet Jesus.
Detective Boone said as she grew into her early teen years.
Emily's body grew, breasts and curves came back as hair sprouted back between her legs. No one noticed as toddler Jason pulled out the briefcase and selected a needle he had specially made. Detective Boone's eyes were on the aging teenager, now nearly a full-grown woman. Wow, that felt wonderful and painful at the same time. By the way, my name really is Emma Hurst, Emma said, happy to have her adult name back again. That must be Jason King, Detective Boone said, and paused as he looked over at the toddler now curled in pain. Jason. Emily called, seeing him in pain as he curled into the fetal position. Emily saw the discarded needle on the floor, now empty. Oddly enough, he had her name on it. Jason, will aging you help? Emily asked as she set the device for 7 years old. Yes, but the pain is already fading. I'm changing. Jason answered, but Emily didn't wait. Emily aimed and fired the device again. Jason aged, but his body changed. His hair color changed and grew long, and when he uncurled his body he looked very different. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Detective Boone said as Jason turned around and stood up, showing them her new body. Jason, you're a little girl now. Emma said and looked down on a face she knew very well. Not just any little girl. I'm Emily King now. I had it made for your replacement after I would have set you free. Strangely enough, I feel perfectly normal minus something I don't think I will miss. Jason said and moved a hand over her new bare vagina. What about the adult Jason King everyone is going to miss? Emma asked, feeling he was leaving all up to her now to explain things. Spiritual journey into India. I will give you the numbers of people to call and what to say. I even have your return to the world already planned out. Just trust me. Emily answered, and Emma nodded her head, but she walked over and picked up the briefcase after closing it. Okay, Emily. Go get dressed and we will make the calls later. Wait for me in your room. Emma said and felt odd in saying it since it had been her name for half a year now. Detective Boone. If you excuse me, I'm going to get a robe from the bathroom, then we need to talk. Emma said and left the room to come back wearing Jason's bathrobe. It took a little longer, but Emma dumped all the needles into the bathtub, then poured an entire bottle of bleach in after it. She half-filled it and decided to let it soak. The bleach would kill all the nasty body-changing viruses in a matter of minutes. Emma figured that the wall safe in the nursery room had the same combination as the one in Jason's office, and she was right. She put the time device, dart gun and Mr. Boone's gun in there when she returned. Emily found a wall mirror and showed Mr. Boone his reflection. Now Detective Boone realized why his voice changed and his clothes felt strange. A young high school boy stared back out from the mirror with a slightly scared look to his face. Now Mr. Boone. Let me tell you a story about an evil woman named Belle Hindley. Then I'm going to give you a choice whether you like to start your life over again like this or a baby. Emma said and then used the key to the handcuffs to let him loose. Minutes later, a teenage Mr. Boone left the house and was going home to prepare to disappear from the world. Emma waited for Jason to return to his room, but after a few minutes she realized what she had said. Emma walked back to her old room and found Jason, or rather now Emily King, fully dressed while sitting on the bed. I meant for you to come back to your room. Not my old one. I guess this is your room now. Emma said, looking around, and had a funny feeling she remembered everything being so much bigger. Where is Mr. Boone? Emily asked. I gave him a choice. I told him I would set him up with a new life as a rich teenage boy, sure to get the pretty girls, or as an innocent baby again. For some strange reason he picked young rich teenage boy. I gave the guest bedroom to him when he returns. I told him everything and I destroy that nasty collection of retroviruses you had. Oh, before I forget, Danny is still knocked out on your office floor. I think we need to call a doctor for him. Emma explained and watched as she took it in. Okay, if you think we can trust him. After this day you are in charge. I really could use a very long vacation and a second childhood where I don't have to pretend I don't like boys. Sounds really nice to me. Emily said and giggled as she said it. The emotional control would take a little while. Emma remembered her time as a little girl during those first few weeks. So give me the phone numbers you wanted me to call, and are you my adopted daughter or younger twin sister now? Emma asked, puzzling out they were now related to each other by DNA.
Let's go with stepdaughter, Emily said, then gave names and numbers.
Danny was taken to a private hospital where he was told not to say anything about Mr. Boone attacking him. Danny was promised enough money to fatten his bank account a little for his silence in the matter. If anyone asked, he was struck from behind and didn't see the person. Since nothing was stolen, they didn't report it to the police. Emma's parents and her younger sister were called nearly at the same time from a doctor with a heavy German accent. He told them a once coma patient of his had woken up with complete memory loss. Only yesterday she finally remembered who she was. When Emma took the phone from the doctor, she was in tears like her mother on the other end. They were all invited out to Mr. King's house where she was staying for her recovery, since it had been one of the first people she remembered as a friend. The reunion was a heartfelt one when her parents were escorted into Jason King's bedroom by Ida, who was staying on in the house in the maid's bedroom. Emma was there in the bed looking very healthy, while a short German man with glasses was wearing a white lab coat as he stood next to the bed.
Emma.
Emma's mother said and nearly fell down getting to her daughter's bedside. Your daughter is a very lucky woman. Washed up on the riverbank miles away from the accident. We searched missing persons, but her face was so swollen we couldn't find a match. Then when she woke up, she had total memory loss until yesterday. Mr. King has already paid her medical bills and she has been asked to stay here until she is well enough to be independent again. The German doctor explained with his heavy German accent as he smoothed out his name tag, which said Drive Harsher.
Thank you, doctor.
If you see Mr. King, tell him thank you from us, Emma's father said, and regretted something he said to the man at the funeral. I will leave you alone now, Dr. Harsher said, and left the room just as Emma's younger sister waddled into the room, her stomach preceding her as she entered.
Hey, sister.
I bet you remember I was a lot skinnier the last time you saw me, Emma's sister said, entering the room and looked very happy that her unborn child's aunt was alive after all.
Mom told me you were pregnant.
Having twins? Emma asked in a joking tone to show everyone she was okay.
I hope not.
Unlikely, since we did the ultrasound a few days ago. Your niece Emma will be here in a month or two. I finally beat my older sister at something, Emma's sister answered back and found a chair to sit in.
Now girls.
It was never a competition, Emma's mother said, but if pressed she admitted she was looking forward to a grandchild.
Mom and Daddy. I just want to say I'm sorry for the last 3 years,
Emma said, and saw her mother burst into tears she did her best to wipe away.
Oh honey. Me and your father can be a bit too pushy sometimes. Everyone is just so happy you are alive.
This might be the wrong thing to say, but everyone came to your funeral. Even that boy you knew in college, but he is married now, Emma's mother said, and was calming down now.
Mr. King told me all about it. It's almost like I was there, Emma said, and smiled at her own little secret.
The door to the bedroom opened just a little. Everyone looked when Emma noticed the movement.
Come on in, Emily, Emma called out, and everyone watched as a 7-year-old girl entered the room and walked over to the other side of the bed.
Well, hello again, little one, Emma's mother said, and watched as the girl blushed a little.
Hello, Mrs. Hurst. I'm 7 years old now, Emily said, and held up her fingers to show everyone just how old she was.
That's wonderful, dear. How about you go over to my other daughter and feel her tummy? You just might feel the baby kick, Emma's mother suggested, and Emily nodded, then went over to Emma's sister to feel her stomach. They talked and Emma discovered her mother hadn't thrown out any of her old things. Then her father talked to her for a little while and made several passing comments that Mr. King was a good man. Emma knew that he was implying she should try to marry him. Then Emma's sister got up from her chair and Emma spent a minute or two feeling her sister's swollen belly. The baby kicked and Emma laughed when she felt it.
Get better, sister.
I got to pee, Emma's sister said quietly so their father didn't hear the last comment. Emma laughed and told her first door before the stairs that led up.
Okay, everyone. I will promise to get better and I will be staying here until I get all the paperwork sorted out that I'm no longer dead.
Emma said in good cheer and her parents left after collecting her younger sister. Once the cars left the driveway, Emma got out of the bed just as Dr. Harsher came back into the room.
Your payment is in this briefcase and I hope you have a long career.
Emma said, pulling out a briefcase from under the bed. It had been the same briefcase that once held a collection of very nasty DNA-changing viruses.
Career, Miss Hurst. I plan to buy my own island and private clinic, then play doctor with the nurses.
Dr. Harsher said, and Emily giggled loudly.
Ah, I forgot the child was gifted and knows more than she appears.
Good day to you, Miss Hurst, and tell Mr. King he can call me for another favor anytime he wants.
Dr. Harsher said and left the room with his money.
That man is going to end up making more babies than bringing them into the world.
Emma said and shook her head at the man now hurrying to his car.
I just wondered if he will hire any male nurses.
Emily said with a grin which showed she was just entertaining a wicked thought.
Somehow I doubt it.
So my evil wicked twin stepdaughter.
What is the next part of your plan?
Emma asked Emily.
The lawyers from my legal firm are due here in a few minutes, then you get everything I own including being my legal guardian while Daddy is away on his trip, but there is a price.
Emily said and skipped out of the room before Emma could ask.
Emily, what price?
Emma yelled after her, but gave up on catching the little girl.
Since her return to her adult body, Emma was still getting used to her longer limbs.
Emma got dressed in her business outfit and went to her office that once had belonged to Jason.
Emily showed the lawyers into the office when they arrived and she took the seat next to Emma.
Once everyone found a seat, they spoke.
Miss Hurst. First let me say I'm happy to see you so healthy looking.
You may call me Linda.
Linda said and introduced her assistants as Dan and Bob.
Mr. King left instructions while he is away that you are in charge of the estate and the legal guardian of his daughter.
I understand he is on a spiritual journey that could last years? Linda asked, pulling out papers to be signed.
Yes.
He hopes to find enlightenment and return in 3 years' time.
Emma answered and saw Emily was following the conversation closely.
Yes, and you understand if he doesn't return in 3 years, everything will belong to you.
Emily will become your legal charge until she is 18 years old, then the estate will be split between the two of you.
Linda asked, and Miss
Hurst nodded in understanding.
There is one catch to the papers you're about to sign.
It seems Mr. King made several deposits into a certain bank.
If you sign the papers today, you must agree to withdraw from this bank by next week.
Linda said and handed over a paper with a bank letterhead on it.
It's a sperm bank.
Emma said out loud and Emily giggled, then gained control over herself.
The men shifted in their seats just a little.
Yes.
Even if you can't have children, it doesn't matter to Mr. King.
He only wished for his line to be carried on.
You only have to submit to one withdrawal.
Linda said and gave the men at her sides a quick glance to stop moving.
Very well, Linda.
I accept this one last surprise from Mr. King.
In a year's time he will have an heir to his throne.
Emma answered, making a joke as she did.
Very funny joke, Miss Hurst.
Sign here.
Linda said and handed over the first paper to be signed.
There were more papers after that.
Teenage Ernie Boone stayed in the King's household only a week, then he moved into one of the new houses in the King housing development.
Of course the house was paid for and they given him a new car to help him out.
Emma set up a bank account giving him more than enough money to make it on his own even if he didn't want to work for the next decade.
Junior Ernie Boone was to become the long-lost son of Detective Boone who retired to travel the world alone.
Emma set up all the legal documents and even given back his gun, then she encouraged him to go back into a police career when he was old enough again.
Over the years they all became good friends and Ernie became sheriff of the nearest town years later with a lovely young wife he first met back in high school.
She gave him only three healthy sons along the way. The baby once known as Miss Elena Etta stayed in the orphanage longer than the other babies until an older couple took pity on her then adopted her. According to the record, she had been found with a note only telling a person who found her that they couldn't take care of their darling Elena anymore. Once the adoption was complete, a pricey pair of earrings and a gold bracelet were unexpectedly given to her new parents. Since her parents were an older couple, they already had enough money to raise her. So they held on to the items until they could give them to Elena when she was 18 years old again. Elena Smith's first years were hard as she was teased and taunted about her baldness by other children. She wore wigs and did her very best to make sure they didn't slip off. She made a few close friends, but it was in those high school years things changed for her. During middle school, all her friends got taller and developed into young women while she remained as a child on the outside. By the time she entered high school, she was heartbroken to see her friends going on dates with high school boys. While boys in the middle school classes were hitting on her, Elena broke her friendship ties with her friends and only a few stayed in touch with her by phone. Depression hit Elena after her parents took her to the doctor who happened to live in the area who specialized in people with her condition. The news was she would never grow beyond the body of an 11-year-old girl, but her internal organs would age and her mind would develop normally. Elena took long walks into the woods and often visited Lover's Leap. On Friday nights, her friends would come up here and make out in their cars. More than often, couples came here and talked. Elena had just turned 16 years old, but outwardly her body didn't reflect her true age. Elena walked to the edge of the cliff and didn't fear the dizzy effect that washed over her. It wasn't a quick drop off from where she stood, and it would require a running leap to clear the last outcropping of rocks. Elena walked back some yards and thought about jumping to end her horrible life so far. Her parents were old now and might live to see her reach her late 20s, then she'd be alone in the world in a child's body. Elena then remembered something about herself and she sat down to cry. "Did you decide not to jump?" a voice said from the tree above her, and Elena looked up to see a boy about 13 years old sitting on a branch. "Have you been watching me?" Elena asked, now wiping her eyes dry. "I have seen you up here a few times. Hell, I even thought about it myself, taking the leap. I'm Tom." Tom said and jumped down from the tree like a cat. "Well, Tom, I'm Elena and I don't have time for little boys. I know I don't look like it, but I'm really 16 years old." Elena said and turned away to walk away mad. "Well, I'm 18 years old. We see the same doctor." Tom called after her, but didn't move from his standing spot. "How did you know we see the same doctor?" Elena asked, walking back over to him to get in his face now. Years of teasing had given her a fearful temper. "I was in one of the exam rooms and the doctor left her chart on the table while she took a phone call. I peeked at it only curious about my own condition, then I noticed she had your file under it with a picture. I was surprised when you lived only a few miles away." Tom confessed and hung his head in slight shame. "I have never seen you in my school," Elena accused next. "Dad left my mom when he discovered I was a freak of nature. He said they never should have adopted me in the first place. Mom moved me out here years ago so we could be close to our doctor, and she has homeschooled me since I turned 14 years old," Tom said, now looking at Elena. "I bet I got you beat. I'm bald," Elena said and removed her wig to show him not even a single hair grew, while her eyebrows were painted on. "I knew that already. News travels fast in a small town. I keep to myself and don't go out very much, so no one knows I don't appear to age," Tom said and lifted a hand to touch her head, and Elena stepped closer so he could. "It's weird. We are both adopted and suffered from some rare genetic disorder," Elena said and liked his touch. No boy her age or older dared to touch her so lovingly. Unless he wanted to be branded as a pervert. "Maybe my real parents knew something was wrong with me. Since the only doctor who is an expert lives in this area, doesn't surprise me that two of her patients would meet someday," Tom said, explaining things to her. "You're saying it's fate then. Do you want to know why I was crying?" Elena asked, and somehow his hand ended up trailing her arm and she liked it a lot.
Sure, if it will make you feel better.
Tom answered. I didn't want to die as a virgin. Elena said and laughed a little when she said it. On reflection, it was kind of funny to her.
Well, if it means you live 100 years, I could live with that.
Tom said sweetly.
Tom, are you a virgin?
Elena asked and thought she'd get a lie.
There was a girl I grew up with.
She became my babysitter after I stopped aging and we made love once, then she freaked out about it later. She claimed she did it only out of pity and told me never to speak of it with her ever again. Since I moved out here, she hasn't contacted me.
Tom said, and his hand started to fall away from Elena's body.
No, Tom. Don't stop. No one has ever touched me like this. Elena said and guided his hand under her shirt. Minutes after having sex, they were sunning their nude bodies on the rocks while lying on their clothes.
God, I just had sex with you and I don't even know your last name.
Elena said with a happy tone she hadn't had in years.
You will laugh.
Tom warned her.
Go on.
Elena said.
It's thumb like the finger.
When my dad left my mom, she legally changed our last name.
I got to pick it.
Tom said. Your name is Tom Thumb like in those fairy tale stories.
Elena said and laughed, and it was like music to Tom's ears.
My favorite book is Peter Pan.
Tom said, and Elena laughed in further amusement.
So I guess that makes me your Wendy then?
Elena said and shared a few kisses with him.
I want to meet your mother.
Then in a few days you can meet my parents.
Elena said as she relaxed on his chest.
Whatever you want, just as long as we can have sex again.
Tom said and got his wish.
2 years later they were married at a very private wedding and Elena gave him his first son through a cesarean section.
Then they had a daughter a few years after their son was born.
Then it was decided they couldn't risk her health with a third child, so Elena got her tubes tied, as they say.
After the death of her parents, Elena moved in with Tom and his mother, who treated them like adults.
As it turned out, Elena inherited a small wealth of money which would provide for her family for years to come.
Emma inherited everything Mr. King owned, and in time her family moved into the huge house.
She gave birth to twins just months after her sister gave birth to her niece,
which she crowed later to her sister. She now had more children than her sister.
The twin boys were healthy and had a loving older sister to look after them.
Emma was just getting little Robert King settled for bed in his bassinet,
while her other child Jason King was still breastfeeding on her nipple.
Emily came in and Emma made no move to cover herself, but stayed sitting feeding her little boy.
Mommy, can I sleep in the other room?
Emily asked as she came and gave her mom big puppy dog eyes.
Oh, Emily. You are going to have to sleep in your own bed one day.
My sister and her husband are moving in soon.
I'm pretty sure I can convince my parents to join us.
This house is too big not to fill it up with people we love.
I guess one more time couldn't hurt, Emma said, and walked over to the wall that held a secret door.
Emily was stripping off her nightgown and neatly put the folded clothing by the door before she went to stand over next to the crib.
Emma pulled out the time device from the safe and used it on Emily.
Emily quickly climbed into the crib and soon there was a cute naked 1-year-old baby girl sitting in the crib.
Baby Emily lay down on her back and Emma managed to get a diaper on her with Emily's help.
You know, young lady, I got to thinking. When you are old enough to date, you better remember those needles you once had.
You told me once they make females very fertile in the baby-making department.
Sweet dreams, Emily.
Emma said and saw the look as Emily realized the truth in Emma's words.
Emily wasn't worried.
She decided she would cross that bridge when it came to that.
One thought more than anything came to her.
She could grow up liking boys and everyone would treat her like a normal little child.
Emma didn't picture she have Jason in this manner under her power, but things rarely turn out how you planned it.
For her, life was like an old Chinese curse.
May you live in interesting times.
The end.